Of course, taken out of context and
cumulative moment functions are just cumulative.
Yes, yes. But at that time they were not called cumulants, but cumulative moment functions.
Was a good formula for non-cumulative cumulants, but actually he promises to also make a good formula for commutative cumulants, right?
Yes, commutative is a special case of non-commutative. Okay, so first let me thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to come here and make a presentation. I'm going to talk about cumulants. And I'm trying to give the most general definition and the most general setting where you can define such a notion. So for introduction, I just recall the definition of classical cumulants, which you all know very well. So you have a random variable X, a classical random variable. You take its Fourier transform. For our purposes, it will be just the formal generating series of its moments, the exponential generating function of the moments. And you know that if you have x and y independent random variables, then the Fourier transform is multiplicative. The Fourier transform of the sum is the product of the Fourier transforms of the of the individual random variables. So if you take the formal logarithm of this power series, then the coefficients are called the cumulants of X, and they satisfy the following properties. So as stated before, if you take the logarithm of the product, it becomes a sum. So if X and Y are independent, then the cumulant just add up. Moreover, they are homogeneous. So if you multiply X by a constant, the cumulant gets multiplied by the nth power of this constant. And moreover, you can express the moments of X as a polynomial in the cumulants of X with leading term the nth. So the nth moment has leading term kappa n of X plus a polynomial in the lower order cumulants, and the polynomial has no constant term. Okay, there's an alternative way to define cumulants, which was found by Good in 1975. So you have X, your random variable. You take X1 up to Xn independent copies of X. You take omega, a primitive nth root of unity. You form the sum or this some kind of discrete Fourier transform. X omega is omega X1 plus omega square X2 plus up to omega n Xn. And then the nth cumulant of X is 1 over n expectation of the nth power of X omega. So the original proof, if you look into the paper, is quite involved, but actually it is quite simple to derive this formula using only the three properties here. So what is the nth moment of X omega? By property 3, it's just this polynomial. It's kappa n of x omega plus this polynomial pn of kappa 1 of x omega up to kappa n minus 1 of x omega. So all we have to do is to compute the cumulants of x omega. So kappa j of x omega. So x omega is a sum of independent random variables, so the cumulant is just additive. So it's kappa j of omega x1 plus kappa j of omega square x2 up to kappa j of omega to the power n xn. Now you use property 2 to extract the constant factors. So it's omega to the power j kappa j of x1 plus omega to the power 2j kappa j of x2 up to kappa j omega nj kappa j of xn. Now the xi's are iid copies, so the cumulants are all the same. So this is just omega to the power j plus omega 2j plus up to omega nj times kappa j of x. And this sum you know. This is equal to n if n divides j, and 0 if not. This is just orthogonality of finite characters. And in particular, it is 0 if j is smaller than n. So all these cumulants are 0 here, and the only thing which stays is n times the nth cumulant. Okay, I'll keep this here. Of course, the right way to look at cumulants is like multivariate cumulants as multilinear functionals. So in the classical case, you define multivariate cumulants. You have given a random vector with components x1 up to xn, and you define the nth cumulant of this vector as, again, a derivation of logarithm of Fourier transforms. And this is called the nth multivariate cumulant. And the analogs of the properties on the right here. So the first property becomes, if you can divide your random vector into two groups of coordinates which are independent, then this cumulant vanishes, which you can easily see by looking at the formula of the derivation. Moreover, kappa n is multilinear. And again, you can write the expectation of the product of the random variables as with leading term, as a polynomial with leading term kappa n, and some polynomial in lower order cumulants of the random variables. And again, you can do this Good's formula. You take n independent copies of the random vector. You make again this discrete Fourier transform in each component. You take the nth root of unity, and then this cumulant is equal to 1 over n expectation of the product of these sums. And a note for those who know free probability, the proof here, you can copy it exactly to the free case. And so if we replace independence by freeness, and here IID copies by free copies, you get an analogous formula for free cumulants. And the same here for the multivariate case. Okay, so what makes this work? What is the principle behind this? So the abstract setting is you have given a non-commutative probability space A phi, which is a unital algebra with a functional phi, which takes 1 to 1. You have given, so this is the big non-commutative probability space, and you assume that you have given a subalgebra A0, for which you have infinitely many embeddings into the big space. So you have these embeddings iota j from A0 into A, a subalgebra AI of A, which I denote x is mapped to xi. And you assume that these embeddings are exchangeable. So if you have non-commutative random variables x1 up to xn in your algebra xA0, so xj are in assumed in A0. You take their images in A in different algebras AI, and the expectation of the product does not depend on the indices, but rather only on the relative position of the indices. So if you permute the indices I1, IN by some permutation in the infinite permutation group, then this expectation stays the same. It's like in classical probability, you have A0 is your probability space. So let's take L infinity of omega with some probability measure mu. And big A, as big A, you can take, for example, L infinity of the infinite Cartesian power of omega and the Cartesian power of mu, the product measure, and AI. So these are random variables x of, depending on an infinite number of parameters. And if you have a random variable x in A0, so it's a function x of t, then xi is in the big algebra, xi of t1, t2, is just x of ti. It only depends on the ith coordinate. And then clearly xi, are independent copies of x. And the expectation of x1, i1, xn, in does not depend on the individual indices here, but rather on the relative position of the indices. So in other words, the expectation only depends on the partition to recall capital PN is the set of partitions K. So it's a set of subsets of set up 1 up to N such that VI intersection VJ is empty, and they span up the whole K is the whole set. So if you have given such an index set I1 up to IN, you find its kernel, the kernel of the map which maps J to IJ, and you see that two numbers J and K are in the same block of the partition if IJ is equal to IK. And since this is the expectation is invariant by permutations, this value only depends on this partition here. So define phi p of x1 up to xn for xj in A0. You define this to be just phi of x1 i1 up to xn in, where you choose any index set which has this kernel p. For example, in the classical case, if you take independent random variables, so if you have expectation of xi1, xin, then this will just factor. So this is the product over all blocks of P. So EP, phi equal to expectation. So EP of this product here is the product of all blocks of P of expectation of product of images which are in this block B xi. So in this case, it is rather simple to calculate Vp. So now I come to the definition of independence. So you have two subalgebras of the small algebra A0. We say that they are independent if this expectation Vp of x1 up to xn, which are in B union C, so you take random variables from B and C, and this expectation does not change if you change the partition P in such a way that the intersection with B and C does not change. The best way to see this is to look at a simple example. So you have the algebra A0, you have B and C inside A0. And you take, for example, x1 up to xk in B, y1 up to yk in C, and you look at the expectation phi of x1, y1, x2, y2, xk, yk. And you assume that this must be the same as phi of x1. You take it in the first copy of in A0. So A1, B1, C1. So everything is in the big algebra A. You have sitting A2. On the inside you have B2. C2. So you take x from the first copy here, and y you take from the second copy here. X2, again you take from the first copy, and y2 from the second copy. And if B and C are independent in this sense, this means that this expectation here is the same as this one here.
So, write y1
with 2 above. Yes. Thank you. So, to give the example in the classical case, if you have x, y, independent random variables, you take copies x prime, y prime, x2 prime, y2 prime, iid copies of the pair xy, then this says nothing else than the distribution of x and y, the joint distribution of x and y is the same as the joint distribution of x prime and y double prime. So it doesn't depend from which independent copy you take. You take y, because if they are independent here, they are also independent here. And it's only this relation which you need to have cumulants. So just to take Good's formula as a definition for cumulants. So you have x1 up to xn in the small algebra A0, and you take a nth primitive nth root of unity. You put xj omega just as before, just with different xji's. And you define the cumulant to be this expectation given by Good's formula. And then you can show the main property of cumulants. Namely, if B and C are independent in the sense defined here, and if you take random variables x1 up to xn in the union of B and C, such that each algebra appears at least once, then this cumulant vanishes. And for the proof, you just expand this product, the product of the sums, into individual terms, and you see that by independence you can rotate the indices in one of the two factors, and the cumulant must vanish. It's rather messy to write it down, but it's really not very difficult. Okay, to make the connection to the classical formula for cumulants, which is by Möbius inversion, I give some short introduction to Möbius inversion. So the set partitions form a lattice. In particular, they are poset. So you have Pn. So P has some blocks, P1 up to Vp. And if you have another partition, say rho, it's W1 up to Wq. You say that P is smaller than rho if each block of P, all j, there exists a block of rho such that Vj is included in Vk. So this makes the set of partitions into a poset. And on poset you have this machinery of Möbius inversion. So first you define the incidence algebra of a poset, which is just a finite, for us it will be finite, a partially ordered set. So it's a space of functions defined on pairs x, y, such that x is smaller than y. And on this set of functions, you define a convolution, f star g of x, y, is the sum over all z between x and y, f of x, z times g of z, y. This becomes an algebra. So this multiplication is, this convolution is associative. It has a unit, just the delta function of x, y. And for example, if the poset P is the set of numbers 1 up to n with the natural order, then this I of P is just the set of upper triangular matrices. And just as in this case, an element of this algebra is invertible if and only if it doesn't vanish on the diagonal. So a prominent example of such a function is the so-called zeta function, which is just identically one, and whose inverse is called the Möbius function. So by the very definition that it is the inverse of the zeta function, you can define it recursively by mu of xx equal to 1, and mu of xy is minus the sum over all z between x and strictly below y, mu of xz. Yes. And then you can formulate the principle of Möbius inversion. So now you have two functions given on the poset, P. And the following conditions are equivalent. So G is, in some sense, the integral of F. So G of X is equal to sum over all Y smaller than X, F of X, of F of Y, if and only if F of X is equal to the sum over all y smaller than x, g of y times the Möbius function of y and x. Okay, so if you expand now come back to this slide if you expand this expectation of the x omegas after some manipulations, you find that you can rewrite it as a sum of all set partitions, Vp of x1 up to xn times the Möbius function on this poset of set partitions, where 1n hat is the partition which consists of only one block. So this is the maximal partition for this partial order. Okay, once you see this, it's natural to define partitioned cumulants by setting Kp phi of x1 up to xn is equal to sum of all partitions sigma smaller than p, phi sigma of x1 up to xn, times the Möbius function of sigma and p. And by the very definition of the Möbius function, you can write then phi p as the sum of all sigma smaller than p times k sigma phi of x1 up to xn. Okay, I'll get this here. Now there's again a good formula for these partitioned cumulants. So you can rewrite this Kp, which was defined as a sum over partitions, again as an expectation of a product of some random variables. And in some sense, you do the good construction in each block of P independently. So again, you take n independent copies of the random vector x1, of the given random vector x1 up to xn. And for each block, you can combine, okay, the t's should be x's here. Ti. So in each block, you do this good construction, which with a primitive root of unity of order of the number of elements of the block. And then again, by expansion, you find that the partitioned cumulant is 1 over the product of the cardinalities of the blocks times the expectation of the product of these sums here. And once you have these partitioned cumulants, you can get an inverse implication of the proposition cited before. That means that, first, that if B and C and subalgebras of E0 are independent, then mixed cumulants vanish. That is, if you have x1 up to xn in the union of B and C, such that in one sum of the blocks of P, there are random variables, one xi coming from B and another one from C, then Kp vanishes. And the opposite implication also holds. If you have this property for every permutation P, this implies, and for every sequence of x1 of xn in the union of B and C, this implies that B and C are independent in the sense defined above. Okay, examples, classical cumulants. We have seen that EP, expectation, the partitioned expectation of x1 up to xn is the product of the blocks, expectation of the product of the xi's in the individual blocks. And now you can write Kp, again, as an expectation of independent random variables. So this very property also applies to the cumulant, so the Kp is also multiplicative on the blocks of the partition. Now let me come to free cumulants. So for free, I just recall the definition. For this free independence, so you have A0 phi, a given non-commutative probability state, and you see that subalgebras B, C in A0 are free. If phi of A1, B1, AK, BK, equal to 0 whenever aj in b, bj in c, such that phi of aj equal to 0 and phi of bj equal to 0. And then you can see easily that this freeness is the same as independence. If you put a, p, the reduced free product of a0 with itself, infinitely many copies, and taking the definition which I gave before. So if you now apply this definition of cumulants, what you get is first, for the moments, the partition moments Vp of x1 up to xn is the product of over the blocks of P of the expectations of the product of the xi's in B, if P is a non-crossing partition. Non-crossing means just give an example. You have 1, 2, 3, 4. This is a partition of the set of four elements, which you can graphically represent as by connecting the points which are in the same blocks. Now, if you look at the partition 1, 3, 2, 4, graphically it looks like this. And you have a crossing here. And a partition is non-crossing if there's no such, if in its graphical representation you have no crossing in this sense here. And from this definition you can easily see that for non-crossing partition the expectation factors, and if P is crossing you get a rather complicated expression. Now for the cumulants again, for non-crossing P it factors along the blocks, and if P has a crossing it just vanishes. So a fortiori, so the set of non-crossing partitions is a subposet of Pn. So in particular, it's again a poset. You can do Möbius inversion on this poset, and you get the formula of found first by Speicher, which expresses the free cumulants of x1 up to xn as sum over all partitioned moments. Now they only sum about over the non-crossing partitions. And for these, you can evaluate the phi sigma just as a product of expectations. So for the calculation of cumulants, you do not need the complicated expressions. So just some remarks about what are Gaussian random variables in this general setting. So Gaussians are best understood via central limit theorems. I just cite here a central limit theorem due to Bojeko and Speicher. So you have a phi, a non-commutative probability space, and you have exchangeable random variables, xi, in the sense above, which are centered, so phi of xi is equal to 0, and phi of xi squared equal to 1, normalized to variance 1. And you have the so-called singleton condition, that is phi of xi1, xi2, up to xin, is 0 whenever one of the indices appears only once. Then you can prove a central limit theorem. You take Sn, 1 over square root of n, times sum from 1 up to n xi. And if you take the limit of the nth moments of this sum here, it is 0 if the exponent is odd. And it converges to some function on pair partitions. So pi 2n2 is the set of partitions, such that each block has cardinality exactly 2. So you split the set into pairs. And then you can express this 2nth moment as sum over all pair partitions of function t of p, where t is some function on pair partitions, which is exactly given by p of x h1 up to x hn, where h is such that its kernel is exactly equal to p. So you define now Gaussians. The random variable x is Gaussian if there is such a function such that vp of x repeated with itself is the sum over such a function on pair partitions. In other words, only the second order cumulants, as defined before, are non-zero. And then there's some characterization of Gaussians. First, there's Maxwell's theorem, which says that a random variable is Gaussian if and only if, so a sequence of random variables, of IID random variables, is Gaussian if and only if it's invariant under rotations. Then there's Bernstein's theorem, which says that if you have x and y independent, such that two non-trivial linear combinations of x and y are still independent, then x and y must be Gaussian. This still holds. Then there's Lukács' theorem. So you have a finite sequence xi from 1 to n of independent, identically distributed random variables, independent again in the sense, the general sense defined above, then these are Gaussians if and only if their sum and the sum of the variances are independent. Marcinkiewicz's theorem does not hold in the general case, which was shown by Voiculescu and Biacovici. It doesn't hold, for example, in the free probability. And also Cramer's theorem does not hold. Okay, I have 2 minutes. Oh, I don't have time to make some remarks on Fock spaces. Neat. So what is Fock space? I follow the definition of Guta and Maassen. So you have given a complex Hilbert space H. You define an algebra C of H. It's the free algebra, the free star algebra generated by elements L of H, L star of H, for H in the Hilbert space, with relations L of lambda F plus mu G is lambda L of F plus mu of L of G, and the adjoint of L of H is L star of H. So this is a non-commutative algebra. And you see that a state on this algebra, you join a unit to this algebra also. So it's the unital star algebra generated by this. So a Fock state is a state on this algebra which satisfies, so the L of H are called creation operators, and L star of H are annihilation operators. So a Fock state is a state such that rho of L of H star, L of F star, L of G is equal to inner product of F and G. And for any other combination of the exponents star and 1 here, it must vanish. And moreover, you demand that if you rotate the vectors hj by some unitary operator on h, then rho of such a product does not change. So in particular, if you take hi in... Okay. If you split H, which you assume are infinite dimensional, into a direct sum of infinitely many sub-Hilbert spaces. If you take F in H1, okay, these are all copies of one, call them H-Twiddle, all isomorphic to one given Hilbert space H-Twiddle. And then you define for H in H-Twiddle, you define L of H I by L of H I, where H I is the image of H Twiddle in the ith copy of H tilde here. Then these are clearly exchangeable, because by assumption for any unitary this expectation does not change. So you can take the unitary just the permutation of these spaces here. So you can define Gumulans for these operators. And there's one special case where you can actually calculate the Gumulans. Okay, first there's proposition that any Fock state is given by, again, by a function on pair partitions. The proof is essentially the same as for Gaussians, that spherical symmetry implies that all Gumulans vanish if they are not supported on a pair partition. And now if you look at the so-called generalized Toeplitz operator, which is for a given unit vector H, you take the sum L star plus sum from K to infinity alpha K L K minus 1 power of L. Then the nth Gumulan defined by the formula given before is just the coefficient alpha n times some number bn, and where bn is just the expectation of L star to the power n minus 1, L n minus 1. And this was calculated before for the so-called free Fock space by Voiculescu, and Q Fock space, this was done by Andonica. And the proofs of these are rather simple by just using this formula I gave before. Okay, thank you.
Is there a formula for the non-crossing Mobius inversion
formula? Of P rho? There is a formula if there's a formula for this which you can calculate. It's just the product of the Catalan numbers where Kj is the cardinality of the block Vj, if I'm correct. Ah, yes, minus 1. Minus 1 to the power kj minus 1. Yes? Yes, but for example, you can show that the interval p rho is isomorphic to some the direct product of non-crossing partition lattices, kj for some indices kj, and then the Möbius function is just the product of Möbius functions of these. This is just a special case of this formula here. But to find this equivalence is rather complicated, not as easy as in the lattice of all partitions. But it can be calculated.
So, do you have a version of freeness for the
cube? Yes, but not in the sense of convolution of measures. you have this Q-Fox space. So on some Hilbert space H. Now again, if you split H into direct sum of, then L of F and L of G are exchangeable. Okay, like this. These are exchangeable, so independent in the sense which are defined. But the joint distribution depends not only on the moments of this, but also on the internal structure. So you can have, let's just call it the Gaussian functor. So this is gamma Q from H to this algebra C of H, which takes H to L of H. So it takes orthogonal subspaces to exchangeable algebras, but you can have you have this subalgebra CI of H, which is just gamma Q of HI twiddle. You can have elements T, S, and T. So S in C1 of H twiddle and T in C2 of H twiddle, such that the individual distribution of S, S and S prime, which have the same distribution, but the joint distribution of S and T and the joint distribution of S prime and T are different. So you cannot do the calculation on moments, you have to remember the whole structure of the operator S and S prime. So in that sense, there's no independence in the sense of moments.
And are those roots only coming up in the classical case? When you discuss the classical case, you have these roots of unity. Is that only for the standard partition or do they come up in these calculations? The amazing.
They're always there if you define this cumulant. Maybe I have. Here somewhere. They are always there in the definition. So you take the nth roots of unity.
That only comes up in the regular partitions, or is that non-crossing partitions too?
If you expand this, you come to the lattice of all partitions. But for free, for example, for the free case, you can show that the KP vanishes if P has a crossing. So then you can do Möbius inversion on the lattice of non-crossing partition and you get a non-crossing partition formula. But yes, you cannot express this with the help of this. Yeah, you're right.
At 2:15 or 2:15 here.